Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good, good, good. Well, I say I'm all right. I had an interesting morning. I had back problems on and off for ages, just
Oh, God.
like knots in the back and all that kind of shit. And I've just moved house and decided to go to the local chiropractor for a like consultation, and they do like deep tissue massage and stuff like that there, which I usually helps quite a lot. And I went in, and the woman that had a little prod, and I was telling her like all my problems, and she's like, "You're not an old man, but okay, fine, fine, fine." And then she started prodding my back, and she's like, "You are very stiff. You do not move well. You do not move well at all." And then she's like, she stood behind me. She's like, "Can you just turn your head to the left?" And she's like, "No, don't twist your shoulders. Just turn your head." And she just went, "Wow. Yeah, that's not great." So then did all this manipulation stuff later on, where she'd literally just get my head, and I'm lying there. And she's like, "Okay, floppy head,
Oh.
floppy head." She's moving it left and right, and she just goes crunch, like she's
Oh
like
no.
Stallone trying to break my neck, and it just went tick, 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 tick. And then when I was leaving, she's like, "Turn your head to the left," and I turned it. I could turn it right the way around. She's like, "I can see your nose and chin this time. It's amazing."
Yeah, they are
So I.
they're fairly scary, those things, because you want to almost resist the neck thing, but it's like, I've got to be really, I don't want to get my neck broken here.
No. Well,
Like the
apparently it's
old
a,
movies.
yeah, apparently it's a myth in all of those movies. It's actually physically impossible to snap someone's neck like that.
Oh, really?
Which, when I found that out, made it really disappointing for every movie that I've watched ever since. But yeah, you can't kill someone by twisting their neck. It just doesn't happen. There's no
Oh,
way.
right.
There's no way you can apply anywhere near the correct amount of force to do that.
I haven't been to chiropractor for a long time. I had on and off back issues as well. In fact, mine went out this week. So, but it's completely random. I mean, I can be fine for ages. I can go running. I can lift stuff. I can do all kinds of whatever. And then it's the most stupid reason. It'll be like doing your laces up or something. Putting your trainers on. Or this one was my wife had some appetizer delivered because she likes appetizer, so we got ordered it from Amazon pantry thing.
Oh, that's
And
good.
yeah, and they ordered just delivered two boxes to the back gate. So I just go and pick up this box, and it's 12 appetizer bottles. That's all it is. So I'm picking up. I literally, as I go down, I haven't even probably started picking it up. I think I'd sort of gone down to just get into the position to pick it up, and then when it happens to me, it's like, and it can be really bad where I can't physically, I'm on all fours, trying to recover. But it sort of feels like the only way I can describe it is if someone stretched an elastic band across your back, right across your back and then
Yeah.
lower back, and then they've let go and you felt the band go straight across. That's what it feels like. It feels literally like something has snapped. And then I just get these weird twinges where, and it's really weird because after it happens, I physically feel stiff. I feel like I can't bend. And then as it loosens up and gets easier, it comes back at the weirdest time, like just turning at a certain angle or something like that. And it's horrible when it happens. The worst one it ever happened was when this is years ago when we lived at the last place, and I went out for a run and I just literally went 20 feet out of the drive. And it just went, and I couldn't walk. I was on all fours crawling back into the house. And of course, I was
That's
working
not
for,
good.
I had a normal job where I drove to work. So I had to get in a car, and I had a Z4 at the time, which was, a little sports car that you have to sort of crouch a little bit to get into, tip your head down. So the worst thing was trying to get into a car where you have to put your neck forward to get in. Oh, it's just horrendous. So I know what you're going through. But I did go years ago, and they did all that stuff, and it did feel better. But I don't think they've ever fully identified what my issue is. It's just, it probably is me, sitting around all day pretty much, like you,
Yeah.
and just not getting enough movement. So I probably need to get some sort of massage done or something.
I said to her, "Oh, I." She's like, "Do you sit down for long periods of time in a row? Because I've got someone else that comes in who works with computers, and she just sits for like 5 hours straight." And I was like, "I used to, but I've got the Apple Watch now, so it makes me stand up once an hour." And she's like, "What exercise do you do?" I was like, "Oh, I go for like a 30-minute walk every day, get my exercise stuff." And she's like, "That's not exercise, that's living." Fair enough. So if you stay sat down, then you're technically like you're not moving. That's dead. You need to
Yeah,
move more than
exactly.
that. She's like, "You should be sweating and breathing heavily." I was like, "Well, that sounds like walking to me." She
Yeah.
didn't find it as funny as I did.
Yeah, I mean, I try and do half an hour in the morning where I jog with the dog, and then I take him out for like an hour's walk in the afternoon. So I'm hopefully getting more than my normal.
Yeah.
I think I end up doing like 12,000 steps or something, which is quite addictive actually, that whole thing, because when you do, there was, I think at the weekend or sometime last week, there was something going on with the kids and picking them up or whatever, where I'd missed my window in the afternoon to walk. And I just thought, oh, I won't bother today or whatever. And then you actually think, oh, damn, if I don't, I'm not going to get my step count. I'm going to break my week, sort of thing.
So that gets a lot harder with WatchOS 4 when it's like gets to the end of the day and it's like you've not walked as much as you usually do.
Yeah,
you
that's
should,
gonna be
you should do it. Cause like prompts you, doesn't it? I've not installed it because I'm not crazy. But
I haven't done it on the phone and the watch yet, but that does look quite cool.
Yeah, I don't like installing. Well, to be honest, I don't even install the later betas on my main iPhone anymore because it's too much of a hassle, especially with the watch, because then you have to upgrade the watch, and I've got two watches, so then I have to upgrade both, because otherwise it gets a bit confused as to why one is and one isn't. I just don't bother doing it. I'll upgrade the iPad sometimes, or maybe like one of my old devices, but then if you upgrade an old device, it's completely pointless, because most of the stuff tends to be, for example, the thing I'd be interested in would be like the Siri watch face, which gives you like all of your updated calendar stuff.
Yeah.
But if I do it on an old phone, then it's not going to have a watch paired with it, so I'm not going to get any of that. I'm not going to get anything that does anything with my data, and all the cool stuff is coming in apps, which won't come until September anyway, so I just get,
I mean, I'll
to put it on my iPad. I might do it on the iPad so I can
play. I did the iPads. Yeah.
Multitasking stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I waited till beta 2 just to not be jumping straight into the first one. I won't do it on the phone yet. I probably won't do it on the phone until it's much later beta, you know, five or six or something, because I don't need it on the phone really. You know, there's nothing that's appealing to me at the moment. The big stuff for me is on the iPad. So I've got the new Pros, obviously, and resisted as much as I could, but I really wanted to try out the drag and drop and all that stuff, and the new you know, app overlay or whatever they call it, where it sort of pops over the top. And so I just, well, as soon as beta 2 came out, I just thought, oh, bollocks, I'll do it. And it's amazing. It's actually, for a second beta, it's actually amazing. Because what I always found with new betas, it was always like certain apps like Skype and certain apps that just would like launch and crash.
Yeah.
And it would be like that for pretty much every beta until it got to like almost like the gold master, and then it would suddenly work. But it was... So, and Skype, you know, I do use, and I use some other apps, and apps like Trello is my sort of app I use at the moment, and that was failing. But I actually just did a quick tweet, and they said, we're going to add you to the beta list. So I've now got the beta that works with iOS 11, which is nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So I just got that through test flight. And that was just one of the classics, opens, fails, opens, crashes. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. So that works, which is great. And so, yeah, when all the main apps work, and I've been using it to do stuff with drag and drop. Obviously, the only issue at the moment, which is understandable, is that there's not any apps that support drag and drop apart from the Apple ones, because they need to add that capability.
That's true.
So you're sort of dragging, and you're going through that first, this is going to be really cool in September. I can finish this process of this drag. But getting used to the whole interface is interesting, with the whole way that... that you do split views now, and the way that you work with apps. It's sort of, I was trying to demo it to Hannah. Look at this really cool thing. I can do this. And then I was thinking, actually, how the hell do I do it? Because the app I was trying to get to wasn't in the dock. And so it was trying to navigate to where the app was. And like, can I do spotlight? And so it was just trying to work it out. And then I finally clicked and worked out how to do it. And I'm then, like, oh no, it is really good. And she'd lost interest by then. but what I did find really cool is the dock is, your ring's just gone off. Mine's gone off as well. The dock is really cool because you can throw so many apps in it. It's unbelievable. I mean, I've got the, on the 10 point, I haven't tried it on the 12.9 with the dock, but on the 10.5 last night, I was dropping some more apps into the dock, and it kept going. And I was like, hold on, okay, that's interesting. And I think I've got to the limit now. I can't remember what it was, but then I must have something like 10 apps in the dock, or 10 or 12 apps or something. And the icons just go down super smooth, super small. It's like Mac OS. It's very cool.
They used to be like really bad for battery. Like,
yes,
install it and know that by lunchtime you'd probably need a charge, because a ton of debug stuff at the same time. And I think that still happens with the watch, because obviously the watch battery is so much smaller. And it probably does actually happen on the main iPhone as well, but seeing as my iPhone lasts well beyond a single day anyway, I don't tend to notice it as much. But they have definitely improved, because like the original betas used to be just terrible. Like literally, like, oh, you've got 3 hours of battery life now. Enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. But,
I noticed, funny enough, you were saying about third-party apps not working, that the release notes now have, like, they list some apps that don't work or workarounds.
Oh, yes.
There were a couple. That, yeah. I can't remember what ones they were because I've not installed it, so I've not looked at release notes properly. But there were a few that were, like, mentioned. I think Twitterific was one where it's like, oh, yeah, this won't work. So you should know that before you install, which is nice because they never used to do that.
No.
But I'd be interested to know the criteria to get onto that list. Or whether it's just literally some apps that Apple developers use and then find don't work and mention it internally and it gets added to that list. Because otherwise it seems unworkable as to how long that list could become with so many apps that tend to crash on launch, as you found with Trello.
I mean, it could be. I guess they've got stats, which is the popularity of apps that have been installed. And maybe there's some analytics that they can collect about usage. And so it's almost like, right, out of the 20 apps that we're finding other, or out of this list of apps, out of the most popular apps, these are the ones that are not working with this beta. Somehow they've been tested or whatever. You know, they're using maybe a call that they know is not going to work or going to cause a problem. I don't know. It's interesting because, you know, think about the number of apps there are, and there, it wasn't a long list, was it?
No, it's only like 7 or 8, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting.
No, I mean, it does change because obviously we're going to talk about iPads. You know, the new iPads are really nice and they're fast and the whole promotion things, everything's really slick. But I think it's that whole thing of when iOS 11 finally comes out, people are going to realize that there's two parts to it. You know, there's when you combine iOS 11 with the new iPads, it's just crazy how smooth and fast they are, even with a beta.
One of my things about the new iPads is that I desperately, desperately want. I found myself using my iPad more and more for some reason, even though I've not got the new beta on it. It's just sort of remembered that it's there, and so I've been using it more. And I'm really tempted to put iOS 11 on it, but I'm also really tempted to buy the new iPad. But if I buy the new iPad, I know it's going to ruin the phone for me because the ProMotion display being such a fast refresh rate, it'd be like, no, I really don't want to have to go through that and then have to go back to my iPhone and be like, oh, I hate this thing. But I also would be very, very tempted if I bought the new iPad to stick iOS 11 on it, which I also probably don't really want to do because that'll, while the betas are good, there's still going to be problems and issues, and I don't want to have some of my devices on the new one, some that aren't.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what syncing problems that will cause. Like, obviously Notes is different, like the way it lays out things is slightly different and it's all upgraded, and it's like, I don't know how backwards compatible it's going to be, or I'm sure it will be when it launches, but I don't want to have to do something on my iPad in iOS 11 that then breaks my Notes database and then syncs it back to my iPhone and then breaks it all there as well. So I'm kind of very much, I'll just wait for iOS 11. I'm not working on anything at the moment that uses anything special that they've added. Because even though there's a ton of new APIs and stuff, there's nothing that I'm like, ooh, I really want to try that out.
Yeah.
If there is, I can, on like the iPhone 5S or something, like if I want to play with ARKit, I think is the only thing I would be tempted to look at. Because that seems crazy. I mean, I've seen a few of the apps that have come out from that. It's mental. The tape measuring stuff is bizarre. Yeah.
And I mean, okay, the critical eye in me obviously looks at that and goes, yeah, well, it doesn't quite line up, you know, but for what it's doing, because when you see the virtual tape measure go next to the other one, it's like, well, actually, it's not quite right. But actually, when you think it's just using a camera, it's pretty good. And I think some guy said that he did it with his table or something, and it got his table wrong by like 2 centimeters, you know, at distance, the height.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean, there's a couple of demos I saw. I need to find the links, actually. There was one with, have you seen the one with the red chair? I'll send you the link. There's a fantastic one with a red chair. Just like a red sort of, almost like a, looks like a plasticky bucket chair, maybe, you know, like an office chair, but like a bit of a fancy design. But you can tell it's not real. You know, when you look at it closely and you see the whole thing working, and if you really pay attention, you can tell it's not real. But at first glance, when you're looking at the scene and the guy's moving around and zooming in and zooming out, obviously when he zooms in, you can see that the chrome effect or whatever on the legs aren't, you know, is CGI or whatever, is computer. But actually, it looks pretty good. And just the you know, there's that slight movement on the floor as it's not quite right, but you literally have to look for it. You know, you have to look very closely at it to go, okay, that's def, you know, that's obviously, you know, AR kit working. But it's really
seems really stable.
It's amazing. I mean, I'm just thinking of like people like IKEA and all these sort of companies must be going nuts at the moment with the stuff they can possibly do. You know, you can do it based on obviously a live thing from the camera. There's also demos apparently where you can take a panoramic image that you've done. So you could be like, well, go home, you know, at home, do your panoramic image of your room, then come into IKEA or whatever, and you can start, you know, looking at things in there and you know, whether you're wandering around the store and scan the QR code and see what that looks like in your house, or just do it online or whatever at home. It's just astonishing. You know, see what a cupboard could look like, move it around in that space. I think it's going to be, but this is what interests me about what's coming up, you see. So I might have said this before, but AR kit's so good right now, even with, you know, old iPads that are being used to demo with it. You know, these are not the current iPad Pros. These are just the standard iPad or even previous iPads. So it makes me wonder what this next iPhone device could have in terms of, you know, better 3D camera sensing or whatever, that could make it even better. And possibly,
yeah, I don't know if it's, I've not seen like any comparisons, but I'd be really interested to see if ARKit works better on the iPhone 7 Plus because it has the two cameras and the depth sensing and all that kind of stuff. I wonder if it's if it does work better.
It looks crazy. Did you see the one that was the guy looking into his sort of, it was a bedroom and there was like a character in there and there was smoke and it was sort of dimly lit and there was a CG character. Oh, I'll find that one as well. There's this. He says, you know, he said, oh, I put this together last night or whatever. And he walks up, he's sort of in his house or whatever. He turns to look into a sort of a doorway into a bedroom. And the lighting's not dark, but it's sort of, you know, dimly lit.
Yeah.
And there's a person standing in his room. And there's a smoke effect going on that's so subtle you'd think that the actual smoky fog effect was real. It just looks crazy. I mean, it just looks crazy. I think the only thing that's going to happen from all this is we're going to get arm ache from holding bloody screens up all the time to get the effect. But it reminds me, years ago, if you've ever watched the special edition, the extras or whatever on Avatar, so on the Blu-ray and the iTunes extras, excuse me, there's bits where James Cameron has got this thing that looks like an iPad, and I don't know if it was an iPad or whatever it was at the time. I can't remember when Avatar was made. Maybe it was pre-iPad, but whatever.
I think it was he had pre-iPad.
He had this device that he held like a like an iPad, but with these grips, you know, like the sort of cases that they put it in for kids where you've got sort of two handles at the side or whatever. And you held this thing up, you held the screen up. And so when they've got like one of the helicopter things or whatever they caught them crashed and they've got the obviously the real set where they built this crash thing. Yeah, he could hold up this screen and get like a previs of what it looked like, and which meant the cool thing was he could actually then walk around, and so he could walk around and get the right camera shot. You know, you've got the floating mountains in the background and all those things that are going on in that world, and he could work out what shot he wanted based on that because he was really there. And they did the same thing with Tintin, I think it was, and on The Hobbit. So on Tintin, they had the characters doing the live motion, you know, with all the suits on and everything. They would act out the scenes, and again, Steven Spielberg, you know, he could hold up this thing and see through and see the dog and see and with the dog they had like a little you know, like a sort of cuddly toy, which was the dog. That's what they acted with. It sort of sat next to them, you know, and they would talk to it, but it would just sit there. But obviously they'd have the CGI version that would then map itself to the same position, so that would then be animated. And then when you looked through, you saw the captain and you saw Tintin as the actual characters. And you know, it wasn't obviously super high quality, but it's pretty good.
No, it's good enough to get an impression.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Avatar, because I remember when it came out, they did like a deal with Burger King, where they had like a QR code on the side of like the drinks thing, or on the side of the Happy Meal, or whatever their equivalent is, and you could hold your phone up to it, and it popped up like a little 3D model of the spaceship. Or whatever it's called, but they had that, and it didn't fly around or anything. It literally was just like above the QR code, so it was like one of those ones where the whole code has to be in shot, and it works out where it is and puts it above like the 3DS cameras use. But it was pretty cool at the time. But of course, now they'd be able to do it that you just hold your phone up, there's no QR code required,
yeah,
and you'd have it flying around and you'd be able to control it and crash into walls and all kinds of stuff. That's crazy. Well, it's just, it really is.
It's crazy because there's scenes of like a guy, you know, some of the demo, I haven't played with it and messed around with it, but, you know, there's demos of like a rocket ship and stuff, and there's different apps that you can create that give you these different demos. And he's got one with a rocket ship just sitting in the middle of his room. And he sort of walks out of the room and turns around and comes back, and it's still in the same spot. You know, it's like it's there. That's it. So you just think about, you know, your mind starts thinking about stuff like conferences or shopping malls or things. I mean, imagine like a conference. You go to a conference where it's one of these app conferences or whatever, where they have stands and stalls and things, or even a supermarket, just holding it up. I mean, not that you want to necessarily hold up a 12-inch iPad in a supermarket. You might look a bit crazy. But if they went down the glasses route, this would make sense.
Well, why don't you just use your phone?
Well, you could use your phone, yeah, of course. But you sort of hold it up, and you see these signs and indicators above the whatever they call it, the corridor. What the hell do they call that in supermarkets?
Aisles,
that's the word. So you see these, you know, symbols, you know, like an egg or a milk or whatever. It's just be crazy. I just think the possibilities are pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting market. Hopefully there'll be some glasses at some point, though. That's what I want.
Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting. Obviously, I need prescription and I need high index lenses, so I wouldn't be able to just go onto a website and say, yeah, I want -7 or whatever, and then get these 2-inch thick glasses back. But if they can give you something where you can get custom lenses put in or something, that would be quite interesting. I mean, the thing with the glasses is whether, if they did go down that route, you know, because there's all kinds of thoughts around that. It's whether they, because if they did glasses this year, then it strikes me that, well, they've got to surely take advantage of the AR stuff, surely. Otherwise, what's the point of doing? Because some of the rumors I saw were related to the fact that the glasses could possibly have a low res screen in them, a bit like the watch. So they would be just stats. So you'd see stuff that you might see coming up on the watch just in the corner of your eye or whatever in the glasses. So it wouldn't lend itself necessarily to gaming or, you know, crazy AR stuff. But then it seems a wasted opportunity if they've got all this amazing stuff with AR kit coming and then the glasses come and they only do that. You know, surely the glasses would do the AR stuff. But then you wonder about battery life and all the other things.
Yeah, there's definitely got to be something there. It's probably a few years out, though, I would think. Have you looked at maps on the iPad? Because I saw someone tweet a thing today about... there is a full like AR kit supported flyover mode in maps where you can literally like walk around like entire cities and stuff. But I'm not sure if it's a virtual reality thing that you do on a Mac with the headset that it was showing. I'm pretty sure it was an iOS device, actually. I'm sure I saw a control center on it. But it's worth having a look if you've got your iPad to hand, because I believe there is some kind of augmented reality.
Oh, flyover, yeah, hold on. Thing. Oh, wow, yeah. Start City... oh, my God. Okay.
Well, Flyover has been there for a while. That's just like the thing that zooms around the place, and that was iOS 6, it's come up, even.
It's come up with Start City Tour. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I don't think that's it. I'm not sure how they started it, because they didn't show that in the video. Yeah. It just showed the Maps app. But there's something where you can literally like hold the thing and move around with the motion. And you're seeing is essentially what you see in that 3D map mode, but you could be down among it and you can choose where you want to stand, and then you can like hold it and zoom around all the place and stuff, which would be looks very cool in the demo, but it doesn't show the person. It's just screen capture and doesn't show how they initiated it. So
I don't know how it works. I've just clicked the Start City Tour. Have you ever done that? I don't know if it's an
iOS 11. I've done those before. Yeah, no, that was iOS 7.
I've never seen it.
Or even maybe iOS 6, I think. That's just like the flyover technology. That was the one thing that was like the differentiator between Apple Maps and Google Maps when they launched it. Was like, hey, we've got this amazing full 3D models of these cities, so you can fly through them. Used it, and the fact that you, being a massive fan of this stuff and developer, didn't know it was there is pretty damning.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is. I knew the 3D stuff were there. I didn't do the flyover or the tour stuff. But actually, I mean, it's quite amazing because you look at it, at the 3D stuff, and it's like, okay, when you zoom right in, you know, the buildings don't look quite right and the cars look like they're flat and everything. But actually, what it's doing is pretty amazing.
It is,
considering
close enough
they're mapping cities.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty good. I have used it before. I often use it before I go somewhere new to see like what the car parking situation is going to be. I used to use satellite for that, but now I use that. And sometimes it's great. Like, even though you can't like read the front of shops clearly, you can sort of look and go, oh, well, that's definitely a WH Smith's, because even in it's like, looks like it's been made out of cardboard or something, but it you can still tell the difference between an Argos and a WH Smith's, for example. So it's pretty good.
I've done the same thing where I've had to go into London to get to some, like when we went to the restaurant. So I did a quick look around the area just to sort of see if there was an obvious entrance or whatever. It's really handy for stuff like that.
I used to use Street View for that. It's always annoying to me that Apple Maps doesn't have Street View. I mean, I understand the logistical challenge of it. It's not an easy thing to do. But I used to do that with Street View all the time, just go and have a little look, scope the area out before you go somewhere.
I thought Google does. Google Maps was 3D. Was that on Android only? Because I don't have it on iOS. I thought they did 3D mapping and had all 3D buildings and everything.
I think they have 3D like buildings, but not with the textures applied to them.
Okay.
So they're literally just like in the normal map mode. I think you can go 3D and you get like great buildings, so you can sort of see relative heights and shapes and things. But it's not.
It's not like the photographic stuff. Yeah.
No, it's not the textured crazy stuff that Apple does. At least I don't think so. I've not used Google for a very long time, so not the best person to ask.
I use it now and again. I try and mix the two, but I've used it more often than Apple Maps, only because even though Apple Maps has got better, I have had a couple of those situations where it has sent me to completely the wrong place. I think one of them was not even obscure. It was Heathrow. It was Terminal 5 at Heathrow. I put in Terminal 5 at Heathrow, and it took me to Terminal 3 or something. It's like, how do you even get that wrong? You know, which when you're on the way to a flight and you're sort of stressed out about making it and everything, is not the best thing to happen. So, yeah, quickly keyed in, quickly did the same thing in Google Maps, and it took me to the right place. But yeah, a couple of situations. But otherwise, I mean, Apple Maps is nice because you've got the integration with the watch. For some reason, the Google Maps watch dropped off, but apparently it's coming back. And it's quite nice getting the little pings on your watch so you can just look at that instead of getting the phone out.
Irritates the hell out of me. I have to turn that. Well, it annoys me. I think there's a setting now, but when it launched, there was not a setting to turn that off if I was in the car. Like, if I'm using CarPlay, I don't need my watch to be vibrating all the time. It's incredibly distracting and more dangerous, I find. And also, I find that doesn't work so well in the UK because we have roundabouts. So a tap for left or right doesn't work because it just goes tap as if to go, like, you should do something here. So then you have to look and see what it is anyway. Whereas, obviously, in America, it's always left or right or straight on, so it's a bit easier. But I've used that once or twice when I was like walking around, and it's kind of fun. Like, if you're going somewhere in London, you're not really sure where you're going, and you've got like quite a long walk, to have that on so you don't have to keep getting your phone out to check. But I think I've turned it off now because it just wasn't playing nicely with CarPlay, and it just irritated me so much while I was driving.
Driving, definitely. I could definitely do with it off. You know, I do not need to be having my watch pinging when I'm trying to drive, and I've already got the sat nav telling me where to go anyway. It almost feels like it should be. You know, if you've got the phone on and plugged into your car, or plugged in, and you're in the sat nav screen, I don't need that coming up on my watch. Surely there should be.
You think it would disable that?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the screen is on. Therefore, he's either holding the phone or he's got it. But you know, there's power plugged in. The screen is on. So he's either and he's in that app. We don't need to be showing this on the watch. You know, you don't need your watch pinging at that point. It should be, you know, screen's off, watch is in your pocket. Or, you know, it has all the proximity stuff, should be able to pick all that stuff up. That would be a bit better, yeah, definitely.
I'm not sure. When I'm told to stand when I'm driving.
That's irritating.
Well, you might be on a bus.
Well, that's true. Get all these people. I need to stand because it's coming to the end of the day and I'm going to miss my badge.
So when you're in a plane.
It'll be like the Pokemon thing, seeing all these people suddenly coming out of their houses. Oh, hi. Yeah, what are you doing? I've just got to walk down the road and back. Run around the garden. So are you going to get an iPad then?
I will probably in September. The issue I have is the screen. I don't need to be seeing a beautiful new fancy screen that I can't get anywhere else. In the same way that, like, when you bought a Retina iPhone,
Yes.
It's just a pain to go back to anything non-retina. It's very much like that, in that I've heard how good it is, and I've seen like comparison videos which don't really give you the full scale of it, as far as I understand, but you can still see a noticeable improvement. And I'm like, I don't want to be doing that, because if I go back to my iPhone and can start seeing it judder, that'll just annoy me. So I could do without for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically that thing where you notice it immediately that scrolling and animations are smoother, and then it sort of disappears. It's sort of just part of, it's in your subconscious then. So as soon as you don't see it be that smooth, it's like, whoa, this is a bit weird.
Yeah.
So it's the same. It's not as obvious as retina, because obviously retina, you can, you know, it's crisper and it's not crisper. It's pixelated and it's not pixelated. So there's a, it's not a subconscious thing. You can actually see the quality. You know, you can immediately see. It's like HD films. I mean, I'm not a stickler for it, but you know, if I've turned a TV channel on and it's not HD, I notice, you know, instantly.
Yeah,
So instantly I know it's not HD, and then I go to HD and I'm like, okay, I'm happy now. Whereas my wife will look at it and go, what's the problem with it? It's like, well, yeah, it's not HD. Can you not see? So let's go to HD. Now look at the face. Can you see the detail on the face? Well, not really. So it's like,
okay. And my wife's the same. It drives me mad.
Yeah, exactly. And the kids don't notice it either. So, but to me, it really, really, really bothers me. So it's not like that.
But it's one of those things akin just sort of to the problem that I have when I play on my PC and I've got it at 100 frames a second, even ultra textures.
Yeah.
And then I go and play on my Xbox and it's locked at 30 frames a second. And I'm like, that's an interesting amount of judder. And then I realize it's not judder, it's just there's not as many frames a second.
Exactly.
And then I get used to it after about 5 minutes. But I notice that especially playing Forza, because I have the exact same game on both. And it syncs the progress. And so if I play it on the PC, I'm like, oh, wow. Ultra wide, beautiful high resolution textures, nice frame rate. But on the Xbox, I get high dynamic range because I've got a 4K screen. But it's like scaled up 1080p and the textures aren't as good and the frame rate's low.
Yeah.
So I generally prefer it on the Xbox because the HDR stuff is really, really, really nice. But at the same time, I have to play for about 5-10 minutes before I can get over the atrocious frame rate. It's the same playing on the Switch as well. The Switch is like 30 frames a second for a lot of stuff. Like when I play Zelda, and it's like, oh God, this looks awful. It's like looking at a slideshow. And then after about 5 minutes, you completely forget that it looked terrible. And it's you've mentally adjusted to that frame rate. I don't need that hassle when I'm switching between my iPad and my phone, which is, I imagine, what will happen. So I'll wait for the time being.
No, it makes sense. But it is exactly like that. Yeah, it's one of those things, you get used to it and then you just go on something else and it's like, oh, this is a bit different. I'm not sure why yet, but it just feels a bit different. And then obviously you realize that's what it is. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, that you would hope that it means they're going to put that sort of refresh rate on the phone. You would hope, because if the rumors are true that the screen's going to be slightly bigger in a similar size case, but they're making it bigger, then it's going to be more like the iPhone Plus screen size, not as big, but it's almost there. So it's still a fairly large area that you'd probably want to get as smooth as the iPad. Otherwise, you're going to have that sort of jankiness when you move between the two.
Yeah.
But I wonder what that means in terms of, you know, laptop tech. You know, is the next MacBook Pro going to have ProMotion screen? Is it relevant for that? You know.
Well, see, when I think of like the way that people talk about the ProMotion screen and like how it works, blah blah blah. Laptops quite often already have like a high frame rate screen. Like, well, not, I suppose not MacBooks. I think they might be locked at 60 hertz, so it's 60 FPS. Whereas ProMotion is 120. On my PC, I typically have it set at 100. So I already have a ProMotion display. That's it. I mean, there's just a marketing gimmick for frame rate. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, refresh rate, I should say. And the clever part of it is that their refresh rate changes up and down depending on, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, one of the biggest ways that you can show the difference between the two is with the Pencil. That's where it gets crazy. Because I thought the Pencil was brilliant anyway. You know, even on a normal iPad Pro, the Pencil performance was fine. I mean, you can just tell that it's not there. You know, it's not quite perfect because obviously there's going to be some latency, but it's much better than a normal stylus, and I loved using the Pencil. But when you actually tried it, when you try it on the new ones, it's just crazy. And I think someone did a video where they did a slow-mo think they shot it at like 240 frames a second or whatever from an iPhone, of an iPad to an old iPad Pro, new iPad Pro, and someone just drawing with the pencil on both. And it's amazing the difference. You know, when it's in slow motion, it looks like it's about an inch. Looks like it's an inch behind or something. It's like, oh my god, it's terrible. And the new one's
which is
so
funny because we used to say how great it was when it first came out. We're like, oh my god, this pencil is just like drawing on paper. And now it says it again, and it's like, what do you mean? Yeah. What's the difference? And then you see the video, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that looks better.
Yeah, it's really impressive, and it just changes. It just does feel so much better. But it's like that thing where it's like it's really difficult to describe. It's just like it just feels better. It feels more like I am drawing on paper, even though I'm not. It just, that sort of uncanny valley type thing of the fact that there is that tiny lag there that you might notice is just, for me, it's gone pretty much. It's really nice experience now. I was playing around with the screenshot thing as well yesterday. That's really nice on the iPad. Just took a screenshot, it shrinks down, tapped it, scribble on it with the pencil, and then save it to your photo roll or share it and stuff. It's really nice. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I've heard about the improvements. That sounds pretty nice. Sounds like useful, because I mean, I take loads of screenshots, so many screenshots that I then use for, you know, send to clients and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
They just constantly fill up my photo library. I actually have a reminder every month to clean through my photo library. So I go through the last month's photos and then delete all the ones that I don't want or need. So a large part of that is removing screenshots, which I won't have to do anymore, which would be nice. But then I also have things like when I've taken 20 photos of the pug just sat and then I was like, well, I only need one of these because the others all look pretty much the same, so I still need to do that. But it'll be nice not having quite so many screenshots filling up my photo library, because I do have a lot of them.
Yeah, I used to have the what was it that I used to, something happened with the watch where the watch would take screenshots accidentally. I can't remember what that was. There was some for some reason I had loads of watch screenshots when the watch first came out. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, there was. That was, was it double? It wasn't double tap, because that was to get to the friends thing, wasn't it?
It was something
that if you pushed them both was it home button and standby button together, did it?
It was
and quite often your wrist would just do that for you if you were bending your wrist or something stupid.
Exactly. So I had all these weird screenshots. And the other one that I did was when Watch 3, I think it was, came out, or 2 or whatever, whichever one they added the SOS thing to. That's where I had the incident where I phoned 999 twice. And I'm not sure. At the time, I had my wrist, I'd got this like this rash on my wrist from wearing a leather strap. And I'd put the watch on the other wrist. And I don't know if this has got anything to do with it, but it was the only time it ever happened. And just the way I was sitting on like this bench outside, I suddenly heard someone talking, and it was like, the hell is that noise? And then I looked down at my watch and it's on a call, and I'm like, oh crap. And it's like SOS. And I'm like, oh Jesus. And basically, yeah. So I dialed them like twice in the space of 20 minutes. So that was actually on a beta. So I was running a beta, and I remember tweeting thinking, oh my God, you know, when this thing comes out, if people have the same situation as me, it's like the 999 service is going to get all these calls from people that have just installed this bloody software because their watch is accidentally calling them. So yeah, I turned off the whatever it is, the hold you down for 5 seconds or whatever, because as you bend the wrist, it was basically pushing it and it was immediately initiating the call.
The other day we're driving along in the car and my wife was using my phone, which was plugged into CarPlay. And then my home screen on CarPlay just started flashing. And I was like, what the hell's going on? That's weird. And it was because she was taking screenshots of stuff. She was like looking at like shopping stuff, trying to work out like curtains and so on. So she was taking screenshots to look at later. And every time she took a screenshot, it does that white flash
on the
CarPlay unit as well, because it also takes a screenshot of the CarPlay unit. That's how you get screenshots of that, which makes sense. It's like, how else would you take screenshots in CarPlay? You just do it with the phone. But it really confused me for a while. I thought I was having a seizure. It was really, really weird. But
get back and find all these photos of your CarPlay.
Well, that was the annoying thing, because all the way through, it's just like a curtain, home screen of CarPlay, curtain, home screen of CarPlay. Constant screenshots.
That does make sense, though. I need to look at it. Sorry, go on.
How is the iPad in general then? How is the size? And I mean, you mentioned the promotion stuff already, but how is it the rest of the stuff that isn't related to promotion?
Fine. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not one of those ones where it's a totally it is a new device, but it's not sort of hit me as much as being, oh my God, this is like the first Pro or whatever, you know? So it, in terms of getting it out of the box and everything, it feels almost indistinguishable from the 9.7 in terms of weight and size. I mean, you'd be hard pushed. If you gave it to anybody, handed it to them, they just think it's the replacement 9.7. It's so close in terms of the size, thickness and everything. There's a couple of little changes they've made around the buttons. They've moved the volume buttons up slightly, which is a bit weird. So as you, when you sort of reach for your muscle memory to where the volume controls are, you end up hitting the wrong one because they've moved them up towards the corner. So hardware wise, the look and feel and everything, it you know, looks the same. Obviously the bezels are slightly thinner at the sides, but it's like you'd have to look closely to notice the difference if you showed it to anybody. The big change is obviously with iOS 11. That's just, but that's the combination of the two. But even with iOS 10, you know, ProMotion super fast. You know, the first time you just scroll the home screen, it's like, oh wow, that's different. And the big one was scrolling like web pages, where you can actually read the text as it scrolls. It almost feels like watching one of those when they do test footage for The Hobbit or whatever it was, where they said, oh, it's going to be filmed in 45 frames a second, God, or whatever. And they showed you it, and I thought, I actually didn't like that, because it's like, oh my God, that looks like a, you know, soap opera. It looks like that horrible thing that Sony do on their screens, where it sort of tries to fill in the frames and you get this horrible motion effect. But yeah, this was actually quite nice. It was like, wow, that's really smooth. And then the animations, everything is just, it just feels very, very slick and very fast and very smooth. And you know, it's that psychological effect where obviously it's a faster processor, but it feels faster, it feels slicker, it feels smoother, everything's nice. But you add that with iOS 11 and all of a sudden I can just see this whole situation now with, you know, September, when all these apps start supporting drag and drop and all these other things start happening. This is going to be a monster of a machine, you know, in terms of just being able to use it for non-development stuff more and more. I mean, I'm looking forward to doing some writing on it and, you know, blog posts on it and being able to, you know, draft up a blog post where you can drop some screenshots in, take a screenshot, mark it up, you know, drop all that product. That's going to be really interesting. So for me, things like, so I do some blogging for Accelerator, where I use WordPress. So imagining like the WordPress app supporting that sort of stuff, where I can, you know, write some content, drag a screenshot in, mark it up, you know, write some and have that workflow. That would be really interesting. And when I've done presentations before and I've worked on Keynote, so I'll switch between my MacBook Pro and the iPad, just depending on where I am and what I'm doing. So iCloud will sync up the Keynote that I've been working on, and then I might get the iPad out if I'm at a conference or doing some last minute things, and I might mess around with it on there and then let it sync back. That whole process of doing Keynote stuff, where you've got to, even if you split the screen, so you've got Keynote on the left and the Photos app on the right, you know, I've still got to, or Safari, I've still got to go, right, Safari, look up an image, save the image to the photo roll, you know, go over to Keynote, bring it back. Just that, making that process slicker is going to be really nice.
Yeah, it's just lots of little things that save you a couple seconds here and there, but just make the whole experience nicer and just make it flow a bit quicker. That's interesting. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, and they've done QR codes in the camera now, so I hadn't tested that before. And I thought, oh, yeah, I remember they talked about QR code recognition. So basically, if you just scan a QR code, if you look at a QR code, this little pop-up comes down from the top like a push notification that just says, you know, do you want to open this link in Safari, or do you want to copy this text to your clipboard?
That's nice.
Which is quite nice. So finally, you know, they've brought that in, which is going to be, because I can see that linking in with the AR stuff. I can see that link doing all, you know, QR codes people love or hate. I mean, I don't mind them, but there's always been that
tendency. Yeah, I've never understood the hatred for them.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's a useful way of pushing data.
They're convenient. Yeah, they're very convenient. For the normal user who you don't want them to have to go and key in a load of stuff, I just think it's... And yeah, they're talking about things like having QR codes on routers, so you can just scan the QR code and you're on the Wi-Fi. That sort of stuff's really cool. I like that.
See, one of the things that I always find with QR codes is that I don't use them terribly often, but when I do, I go to the App Store, download a free QR code app that's full of ads, scan the QR code so I can do it. And then generally what I've done it like two or three times in the last couple of weeks with moving house is like the sign for the front door to hang up had like, oh, for the instructions on how to hand this, use this QR code. And then I went through this whole palaver of downloading the app, going through the ads, scan it, And then it took me to a website that wasn't working. It was like a 404 error. So they'd obviously changed the site thing but hadn't updated their QR code. I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
But then I delete the app straight away afterwards because I don't need that hanging around. So every time I want to do a QR code, it takes me ages because the app's first. So it'll be, I could just leave one. But so I'm looking forward to having that built into the camera app, though. A big improvement.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting. Obviously, I don't know how the whole interface will work as a developer, but I'm guessing there'll be some sort of event or something that fires and you can pick up what the result was. The document scanning's nice. Tried that in the Notes app. Obviously going to piss off loads of people and loads of app developers that have tried to do that stuff already or have done that stuff already.
They've all been terrible, though. Like, I tried to go through that problem a while ago because I scan stuff. It drives me mad. I mean, I don't do very much anymore. If I ever have to, like, soundtrack or something, excuse me, I just use the, I forget when they added it. It wasn't Sierra. I think it was maybe Mavericks. They added that thing to preview on macOS where you could literally draw your signature on a piece of paper, hold it up to the webcam, it would pick it out. Brilliant. And then whenever you want to annotate a PDF, you can just drag your signature and it's a vector that you could scale up and down. It's like really, really smart. And so nearly any time I sign a contract, I just do it in preview, whereas I used to print it, sign it, scan it. Yeah. A horrible, horrible pain. But now I've got a LaserJet printer that doesn't have that. It literally just prints. So if I want to scan, I have to get out my old inkjet, which we don't use for printing anymore. It's all dried up. get the old scanner out, do all that stuff, and it's horrible. So I've tried to use some of these apps a few times where you can just supposedly take a photo and it will automatically recrop it and do it all, and they never work. I've always found them to be utterly shite. I've never found one that's been good. So I'm excited to see them do it because it's all built on top of ARKit, and with all the previews I've seen of ARKit being as accurate as it is, makes me think that it will actually work this time.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive. Just the fact that you could just take a, you know, point it at something that's fairly a good distance away. You know, it could be a foot away from the camera at an angle. But obviously the camera resolutions now are so good that it can just grab it, and it does, it doesn't, it, it, you know, it grabs it and treats it. You don't have to sort of grab it and then you realize, oh, it's done a normal scan of the photo. So there's lots of gradient stuff where it's, you know, the different shadows have come up, and then you've got to over contrast it and over brighten it to get it to look like paper or whatever. It just does it and it's done. There it is, you know, and then it's, you know, safety camera roll, drop into the current note, whatever. I think it's going to be really interesting, all that stuff around the camera.
Funnily enough, that's the one feature that's made me want to upgrade my iPad to iOS 11. Yeah. Everyone else is like, oh, you want to see all the multitasking stuff? Do the drag and drop? I'm like, no, I just want to see that. And I don't even need to use it. I so rarely need to do that. But I just want to see that in action and be like, oh, that's pretty cool.
I need to check, actually, whether it'd be quite interesting to see if they automatically go into an album, you know, like screenshots do. Because it would be quite, what I've been after is just this way of, which I've used other apps for with Dropbox and things, where, you know, you get letters come in, and you know, I've got a pile of paperwork under my computer at the moment, where as these bills or whatever come in, you just want to quickly grab something and just go bang, done. And so it would be good to, you know, on the iPhone eventually, I guess, will be the convenient thing, is to, a letter comes, open the letter, flick, you know, press the button on the home screen, which I'm doing now, flick to camera mode, point it at the, just literally point it at the document, and it auto recognizing it, you know, recognizes it that it's a document that you, you know, you want to take a scan of, and literally photo done, and then it's in my album, and then it's synced to iCloud. So it's like there's no friction, you know. I haven't got to export and then go to Dropbox or log into Dropbox or do anything like that. It's literally point click done. I can tear that up and throw it away.
It does,
and if it does the machine learning stuff, that would be even better, so that I can say, look up Southern Electric, find Southern Electric electricity bill. That would be,
I was gonna say, I think it does, doesn't it? Does it not do OCR on?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it does.
I'm pretty sure it indexes all of the text. Just do it live. Let's see what happens. It'll be the one time it doesn't work, I bet you. Yeah. It's always the way when you demo these things.
I think you have to do it in, you do have to do it in the Notes app. So let me just go to Notes.
Oh, I see. Okay, so it's not. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not actually.
I did wonder how it worked. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, how do I do this?
That's fine.
This is a.
Well, then I guess it's not going to save it to your camera roll.
Right.
Place,
yes.
Because it's going to save
it. Yeah, that's true. So you do scan documents plus scan documents. Right. Here we go. So that has picked up my electricity bill perfectly. Oh, wow. I didn't even press the button. It's just done it. It literally just, it's on auto mode, so it literally just flashed.
It just worked it out by itself.
It's
when
got
it was optimal.
It's come up. So.
So now if you're trying to searching for something, there's the text that's in there, like the price or something.
Yeah, so I'm going to save that. So that's saved.
Now, my understanding is when you're saving it in the background, is it like a second or two, and it'll just go and do its indexing because it's not doing that in real time. It'll just crunch it after.
Yeah, I am seeing if this works. It hasn't done it yet. Let's look for a word in there, electricity. It might still be doing it. It hasn't done it yet.
Well, we'll check later.
I will see if it comes up.
Because that would be cool. I'm pretty sure it's supposed to do OCR stuff on it.
Yeah, I thought it did as well.
I don't know how accurate that is. Because you get to OCR with things you draw with a pencil now as well, doesn't it? Like if you draw a note.
Yes. Apparently, yeah.
Saves it.
That's very cool, though. I like that auto mode, though. I like that. Just pointed it. Bang. Done.
Oh, I don't want to put it on my phone. I know I'm gonna.
I know. I'm exactly the same with the phone. It's like I'm gonna resist on the phone. I'm just gonna keep it on the iPads.
Now it's not so bad because previously you had to do a wipe of the phone, didn't you? You wiped the phone, then installed the beta. Whereas at least now it does it kind of through the you register a profile, don't you? And then you just go.
That's right. And then
is there an update? Restarts. And it goes, yeah.
Exactly. But
well,
I think
the same as updating.
Exactly, and I think because they've done the public betas this week, obviously they're still betas, but I think they've got to that point now where because they're public betas, because there's going to be a load of people, I mean, let's face it, there were a load of people that would pay the 79 quid a year before just to get the betas. There's going to be loads of people using it. It's obviously in their interest to make sure it's as stable as possible, but also that it's interoperable with the other devices they might have. So like you were saying about Notes earlier, so I did a test the other day where I, you know, one of the new features in Notes is that you can just draw pencil stuff in a note and it sort of creates a, when you're doing document desktop publishing stuff and you've got like inline images, wrapped images where they try and wrap the text around and all that crap.
Yeah.
So all it does is effectively you've written two paragraphs of text. You want to do an image, so we'll do a drawing. You do a quick sketch. That just goes in straight underneath those two paragraphs. They're full width and then you can change the height. But it's full width. It takes up the whole width of the document. Anything else you type now goes afterwards. It doesn't try and wrap it or around or any of that crap. So I did a quick test where I thought, well, it should be an image. It should just work. So I did it on the iOS 11 on the iPad and then went to check it on the iPhone and it was there. And it was just, all the notes synced up nicely. So I think
my worry was more, it's probably easier to make it backwards compatible now, but back with the jump from 9 to 10, because they switched it from using IMAP to using iCloud. So literally if you tried to, your documents wouldn't sync backwards to your other devices. And then that got really annoying because I used that a lot.
Well, that is still a valid concern because remember a few weeks ago, I had put a beta of the latest version of a Mac OS, but it was like beta 5. It was like beta 5 or 6. So I put it up to hopefully try and cure a few issues I had. So I put it on my main machine and it was fine. But apart from this one issue where my iCloud syncing was going wrong. And so what was happening was I just noticed when I was trying to use an app, Bear, the sort of markdown editor, wasn't syncing my notes. And then I suddenly realized, well, hold on, my photos are syncing, but other things aren't syncing. So Bear wasn't syncing, Notes wasn't syncing, Photos were syncing. There was, I think, Reminders were syncing. No, Photos might not have been, but Reminders was. So there were certain apps that were syncing and certain ones that weren't, all related to iCloud. So I just raised it with Apple, where it's a support ticket, whatever, and they ended up sorting it out. And it was something, because I'd upgraded my machine, something had happened where the devices had got out of sync with iCloud. So I guess because when I tried to log into iCloud Web, certain apps wouldn't load there. So again, Reminders would work, but Notes would crash.
Hmm.
So it was almost like iCloud was in a mode where it thought I'd upgraded everything. And so instead of going, we've got some different devices here, we've got to be in compatibility mode, it's gone, right, he's upgraded everything. Great. Everything's now on this new version of and so all my other devices stopped syncing and the web started crashing. So they fixed it overnight. I raised it on a Friday evening at about 5 o'clock. I got a call from them which was really cool, and went through the problem. And I didn't have to do that whole, you know, when you normally deal with support things where it's like, well, have you tried restarting and have you tried this? It was almost like the conversation was like, okay, we know that you've tried all this stuff, and we know that this is a specific issue now. Because I could show them the, when you go into iCloud and you see your bar of usage for your iCloud account, the storage, it was all completely messed up. There was stuff missing. You know, it looked like I had no iCloud storage. It looked like I had no backups, but it was all there because I could see it on other devices. So they knew that there was an issue. And then literally overnight, I woke up in the morning and had a message saying, your account should be fine now. And when I checked, everything was there. Nice. So yeah, I mean, it's still a valid thing to be concerned about, definitely.
Yeah, I like to, if I'm going to migrate over to the new thing, I like to do everything. And I really don't want to upgrade my Mac that I do all of my work on to High Sierra. I'm like, no.
It's always fun.
Even just
always
like,
fun.
Because like, if I upgrade my iPhone to iOS 11, then that's fine. I can get along with it. It doesn't really matter if it breaks for me. But then I can't test any apps on it because I need them to be in Xcode 9.
Exactly.
Because otherwise iOS 11 won't work with Xcode 8.3 or whatever it is. Unless you like manually move some decent stuff around, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. I just know if I do it, it adds like another 2 hours of debugging time at some point over the next couple months. It's like, I can't be bothered. Can't be bothered with the headache of it. Anyway, tell me about your thing. You were going to show me the HomeKit. I can't remember what it's even called.
The Lemetric thing.
Yeah, I'm really interested about that. You sent me a photo.
So basically,
box that shows something.
Yeah, it's called a Lemetric, and it looks like it's very light and plasticky. Actually, it's not super huge, super high build quality, but it's basically like a little speaker. It doubles as a speaker, but it's got this screen with like this pixelated screen. It looks like a sort of 8-bit style retro thing. So the resolution's probably literally like 100 pixels by, I don't know, 15 pixels or something like that. But basically you can install apps on it. So you download the Lemetric app, and then you can do things like, so there's a radio station option where you can specify the radio station, then you just press it and it plays it. It's got two buttons it's got a central button on the top that can act as like a switch to do things. So if you had an app that was turning your Hue lights on, you could press it and it would turn them off or whatever, or start a stopwatch and things like that. And then it's got a left and right button that just cycles you through the different apps. So it's like a sort of digital display that you might see the old school ones in a shop or a train station or something, you know, where you get the big pixel. So I've got things hooked up to, what have I got in here at the moment? I have got my Twitter account on there. So it tells me if I've got new followers and gives me a count. Got a temperature app, I've got a radio app, that's just the default. Stopwatch app, that's the default. I've got it hooked into my NetAtmo, my weather station. So it's currently telling me that I now have 2,553 whatever the unit is of carbon dioxide in the office, which is not good.
That is quite high.
Yeah,
it should be 300, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should be much lower than that. So it's got a little red symbol there, and it's sort of scrolling through different data points that you can configure. So you can configure things like temperature, you know, all these different apps. It's a bit like if this then that. All these different apps that you add have these different configuration points. You can hook it up to Facebook, you can hook it up to if this then that to do certain tasks, so you can get notifications from other things. So it's got like an API that you can sort of work with. So, but it's pretty neat. I mean, it's like a clock 2.0 or something, you know. It can display the
time.
This
I just got a notification on my watch from my Aware air monitor that said, CO2 level is rising in the study. Start ventilating now.
Yeah. Well, this is the other thing I don't understand. I mean, maybe I just don't understand the technology. But I've got an air conditioner in the office, which is currently on. And my understanding of an air conditioner is it's sucking air out and pumping air in. It's sucking the hot air out. And it's pumped. So I would think that I wouldn't have an issue with CO2, but clearly I do.
Well, don't air conditioning. What is it, like a standalone unit?
No, it's one of the ones mounted on the wall with the whole thing on the outside.
That should sort that, really.
Yeah, unless it's taking the hot air out, cooling it, and bringing it back in, which I would think was probably not what it should be doing. But I don't know. I need to look into that.
Yeah,
because that's the whole one of the reasons. Yeah, I just thought with the air conditioner, I thought, oh, you know, I know your cars can do that, but there's an option normally to say, do you want to recycle air or do you want to get new air coming in from the outside, which obviously sounds like the better approach. But yeah, I just, I'm always quite surprised by it. So I need to open a window at some point.
It's a nice little device. Open the window. The problem with
the speaker's not that great. It's not as good as a normal sort of, you know, Beat speaker or anything like that. But it's perfectly fine. There's no battery option, obviously, because it's built for being Wi-Fi. But it's really, I mean, it was so simple to configure. You know, it's the old sets up a little hotspot immediately, connect to it from the phone, go into the app, connects all up. It then obviously syncs with time servers to get the right time, and then you just configure the apps you want. But it's a nice little device.
Can you write your own apps for it? Like, can you build them yourself, or is it just like, this is a exact list of people that we've contacted who have done integrations? Or is it fairly easy for like a third-party developer to add their own? Because with stuff like that, I always like to tinker with it and add stuff that other people haven't bothered, which is why I like Homebridge for connecting all my HomeKit stuff, because obviously like the Belkin Wemos don't work with HomeKit yet, although they probably can soon now they don't need a hardware chip as of iOS 11. But I can just tinker and add that stuff. So can you add your own things to the thing, or is it just a closed system at the moment?
There's a developer.lemetric.com which seems to talk about creating apps, create Lemetric apps and earn money with us. Don't know how that works. But yeah, you can publish privately or to the app store, to their app store or the community. Earn a commission. Oh, I see. Earn a commission on Lemetric sales by referring users to your public app or web shop. Okay. So it's got like an affiliate program. Supposedly you can write your own apps.
Oh, that's good then. That seems useful. How much is it roughly?
That's a good question. God, I never look at price. I'm terrible.
I look.
You know, is it 1,000 or is it 200 or something like that?
I'm just wondering if it's sort of in the price area where I'd buy it to play with it.
It is £159.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe not then. I've got enough shit around the house that I can hack with.
I just thought I'd be quite interested to think if you could put two or three of them together and make them, you know, interact with each other in terms of sending a message across all three or stuff. That'd be quite cool.
Has it got like any sensors or anything built into it, like, or is it literally just display and the speaker?
Yeah, it's just a speaker.
Pricey for bad build quality.
Yeah, but when I say build quality, it's just not got much weight to it. It's very light, and it's plastic and light. If it was plastic and heavier, it would feel a bit more substantial. But I guess there's just not much in it in terms of, you know, what it's. It feels so light in my hand, probably lighter than my. Feel it? Yeah, probably. It actually feels lighter than my iPhone, which is crazy. Yeah, but it's a nice little screen. I mean, it's very cute. I just have it on my desk, sort of sitting there. And
did you ever use the a status board app from Panic for the iPad?
No, I saw it, never used it.
Yeah, they discontinued it now, which is a great shame, because when I used to run Wallaby, I built a number of status boards for that, where it would literally just, they were like little JSON or website configurable widgets that had like a XML sort of thing to them. I can't remember the exact API for it, but there was lots of different ones. You could do it very, very easily with like a JSON or XML or something, or you could put in a little web view. And so I had them to show me like the total number of players online, how much money had been made each day, active users, that kind of stuff.
That's quite cool.
Just chuck loads of stats at it. But you could configure that with quite a few third-party things in the same way, because it was just rendering data that you could fetch from everywhere else. And that was very similar, but obviously it was limited to it took up the whole of your screen, so you couldn't use the iPad if you were using it for just that. But quite often they said that people used to just mount them on the wall, and you could it was really crazy, like you paid something like, I think it cost like £5 or £10 or something, but then there was like a premium upgrade which cost £15 to then output via HDMI to a second screen. So then you literally would connect an iPad to a screen on the wall to then show your stats off. And it's like, why can't I just mirror that? And it's like, no, we're going to charge you for that piece of functionality separately.
Yeah, it's quite annoying.
It was an interesting business model. And it's a shame that rather than changing that, they just discontinued. Super useful. It was a really good app. I never paid for it. I'll have it at 4:3 resolution if I want it on a. You can just do the AirPlay thing. But yeah, interesting, strange business model.
There's also a. I was just looking on Amazon. There's a Devoom Aurora Box Bluetooth 4 smart LED speaker and app control for pixel art creation. That's £42. which is interesting. It's more of a, it's a square shape instead of a rectangle, but it's a similar type of concept. It looks like they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's like 10 by 10, 10 by 10 grid of LED lights. And they're showing similar things in terms of little notifications of temperature and, you know, alerts or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's obviously a,
I guess a lot thing. Of that stuff you can stick in a Apple Watch complication now as well.
Exactly.
It's,
yeah.
Tricky. Well, it's tricky because to update complications, I think you can only update them maybe 50 times a day, like with fresh data.
Oh, really?
So for like temperatures and stuff, the way that they work is that they will, like if you have something like dark sky on your complication, it isn't showing you the current temperature now. It's showing you the current temperature that they expected it to be at this time. So say at 8 a.m., they might send a push and then it downloads the predicted pattern for the rest of the day. And then it will just go through that data. So when you get to midday, it might be showing you what it expected it would be at midday at 8 o'clock in the morning. And then they'll send periodic pushes to update that data, but it's actually a timeline that gets sent through. It's a really interesting API. But of course that doesn't help if you're trying to use something like your, what are those things called that you've got, the Netatmo, is that it?
Netatmo, yeah. The weather station, yeah.
It doesn't help with that because you're not polling data with the watch because
exactly.
It's not fast and uses the battery up. So it's kind of better for that where you can just constantly maintain a connection because you don't have to worry about battery, I suppose. But yeah, interesting stuff. Well, I've been playing around with another device called Aurora. Bizarrely, it seems to be a popular name, which is like a Nano Leaf series of like triangles, big triangles. I'm trying to work out what sort of size they are. Maybe probably about 7 inches on each side, so equilateral triangle. And I've got 12 of them, and they stick to the wall with like M3 tape on each corner, which holds them pretty well. And then they can slot together. You get given these like little chips that are almost like a SIM card at each end that you slot in, and each side of the triangle has a hole, so you can make them in any shape you want, really. So you can slot them all together in any pattern with these little bits that bridge them together, stick it on the wall, and there's a little control unit that sticks into any of the triangles on any of the sides to power it all. And then you can change, they're basically like hue lights, so each panel is its own light, which can dim up and down, can change through all the motions of colours you'd expect it to be able to. And then the app's really interesting because it automatically knows what layout it's in. Because I don't know how. It boggles my mind how it actually works. But literally, if you've got the app open and you start plugging in the triangles, you can see them appearing where you've plugged them in. Like, it just knows the route, and so it can then work out how it looks, and then you can rotate it however you want. But that's pretty cool because the standalone app, the way it works is you can have it like cycle through colours. So they've got one called Forest, which is quite nice, where it just sort of like transitions between like different shades of green and whites, and it can like ripple through up and down, or you can have it like just fade all of them together at once. There's like a flame one where it like flickers all different oranges and reds all across it. And it's pretty nice. One of my favourite ones is called Nemo, where it just sets most of them to orange, and then one or two of them will be white. And it just fades. It fades where the white ones appear into different places, which is quite clever. And you can build your own, they call them effects. And there's loads that you can do, like fades or wheels or different directional transitions, so you can go through all different colors. But you can also set it up for things like notifications, so you could, in the same way that you can kind of do stuff like that with if this then that and hue bulbs, you can do much the same thing. So if the doorbell goes, I could probably connect it to my Ring and have the whole thing light up red for 3 seconds so that I can get like a visual.
That's cool.
Someone at the door if I've muted the doorbell, which I have now done, by the way. Totally didn't notice when I went to the door a few minutes ago. So it's really good. I've been enjoying the Ring doorbell. I should probably talk about that. In any case, one of the things that I did for the Aurora is I discovered their API, which is kind of like in development, and I set up an app on my iPad for when I'm playing Rocket League, where I log like all of the stats of the games that I'm playing with my friend John, so we can like tally up wins and losses and scores and try and work out if there's a pattern as to when we play better. And stuff like that. And I've set it up so that when I enter one of these stats and then press for the next match, it'll light up my panels one by one for each win or loss. So if I've won a game, it'll be in blue, and if I've lost, it's orange. And because I've got 12 of them, they fill up from the bottom, and then at the top, they'll just recycle through. So I can get like a visual breakdown of the last 12 games, which has been fun. It's very election-like. It's kind of like the swimometer at the constituency things. It's like got that real, like, when we're playing, I'll be like, okay, like if we've been playing for a long time, so the whole board's lit up, I'll be like, okay, we've got a battleground game now, because if we win this one, then it'll push us into a majority of having more wins than losses, or like have different levels of how it works. So it's been pretty cool. It's been a fun little project just to play with. And light up, but they're really cool. They're called a Nano Leaf Aurora, and they're doing an update later this year where you'll be able to connect it up to like speakers, so it'll be able to like do visualizations based on your music that's playing and stuff like that, which I'll definitely be interested in getting. It was pretty pricey. I think it was about, I can't remember the exact price, I want to say it was about £200 for the base thing, which came with 9 triangles and the thing that powers all the hub. And then I think I paid like another £40 to get like an extra 3 triangles or something, so that I could have a few more. I think you can connect up to 30 of them, which would be huge.
Wow!
And they're incredibly bright as well if you have them on full brightness. It's pretty interesting.
It's 180. Nice device. It's a base price.
Yeah, it took a little while to come as well because it ships from Hong Kong, but it did all arrive. And it's really good, and it's all HomeKit enabled as well, so you can like. Control it with Siri, like turn it on and off. I mean, it does all of the lights at once, so you can say to Siri, like, I'll set my Aurora to be red, and it will just do all of them or change the brightness and stuff, just like you would with the Hue bulb. It just counts all of them at once. But the interesting thing they do is that if you use any of the effects, they save them to HomeKit as scenes. So like the Nemo one, for example, I can say to Siri, set my Aurora to Nemo, and it knows that that's a scene somehow. And so you can kind of fake some of the functionality of the app through Siri, which is nice. But fully HomeKit enabled, which I wasn't expecting. It just arrived and then had a big HomeKit sticker on it. I was like, oh, cool. I was expecting to have to write a plugin for it, but nope.
So the API, is that a local... it's like a local HTTP server it sets up or something? Or is it a remote API that communicates back with it?
It runs its own HTTP server, so you have to discover the device, which was relatively easy actually, and then you can just address it by its like local network name, so like using Bonjour. So then you connect to that over the REST API, and then you get a authentication token by basically pressing the button on the device in pairing mode, and then you make a post request to it within 30 seconds, and then it gives you a token, and then you can use that all the time.
I thought it was
a pretty clever way of dealing with that like authentication issue, so you can't like control the neighbor's ones or anything.
You have to be there. It's a bit like the Hue lights.
Not a problem in most places. The same sort of thing.
That's very cool.
But yeah, I mean the API was pretty easy. I had a few minor issues with it, but nothing major. I got it all working pretty much in an hour or so.
I'm looking at some of the photos on Amazon of the, you know, the product photos, and they've got it on different above desks and things, and it looks really nice.
I've got mine to the right of my desk. There's like a wall with a door on it, and I've got it between desk and the door. So if I'm sat at my desk and turn my head right, which I can now do thanks to the camera, I've now got it, and I showed it to my wife, and she's like, "Oh, it looks like a fat man doing a jump." And I was like, "Not the pattern I was going for." It's kind of like
ruined it. Yeah, I can only see.
It's really
that
just supposed to be like a 5-pointed star, but I can see what she means.
Cool. How are you getting on with the ring?
Yeah. Oh, it's good. It's good. The installation was a little, but not too tricky. There was me thinking, "Oh, my nice brand new build house. It's gonna bound to have like a sensible doorbell that's gonna work with it." After taking it apart and looking at it and going, that doesn't look quite like the manual shows, I then looked online and they said, oh yeah, Dieter ones are not supported. I was like, so it does not ring my doorbell in the house.
Okay.
So I'm just using the Chime Pro, which it came with, because I bought the Ring Pro, so it came with a
Chime. Anyway, for the Chime Pro.
Yeah, so it wasn't really an issue. I just plugged that in underneath in the hallway anyway, so it didn't make much difference, really. The only problem is that the transformer they give you is pretty meaty. Basically, I took the doorbell apart, looked at it all, couldn't quite work out how it was all going to fit together, and then I just disconnected it, took the power cables out, plugged them into the transformer, plugged the other end of the transformer into the wires going to the doorbell, and now it's just sort of like hanging out of my doorbell. So the doorbell's still there, and then underneath is like these wires and a transformer that's just sort of like hanging attached to the wires because they're quite heavy. So I've been meaning to take the doorbell off completely and then put up like a little electric box that can house it properly, but I've just not got around to it yet. And it works and it's hanging there just fine, but it looks a little bit sort of dangerous.
Yeah.
It's not, that's but nice. It looks it.
It's cool though.
But yeah, it's really, really nice. So I got the Ring Pro and the motion sensing's fantastic. I've set that up just for my pathway, because there's like a pavement and cars and stuff go by. So I've got it just for the pavement. So I usually get a notification about a second or two before someone rings the doorbell.
But
it's also useful because then I get to see things like, has the postman been yet? Even if he doesn't need to ring the doorbell, he just posts his stuff through the letterbox. I can still know about that while I'm out, which is nice, and sort of see the video of it in the app. But no, I've been really, really pleased with it. It's been great. My wife doesn't like it so much at the moment because I set it up on her phone with the app as well. And so while she's at work, she's just getting like loads and loads of motion sensing stuff because I keep going out the front door and like going to the garage.
For about
the first week, I kept doing stuff where I'd leave the house and then it'd give me a tap on the wrist to say, oh, you've got a notification. I'd be like, oh, and then I'd look and it'd be like, there's motion outside. And I'd be like, oh, no, it's just me leaving the house again. So I still do that occasionally. But generally, it's been really, really good. I've been really impressed with it. It's nice both functionally and from a security point of view. I'm much happier because most of the time, if someone's going to try and break into your house, they'll not ring the doorbell to see if you're in first anyway, or
exactly
pretend they're a gardener or something. Like we had some really sketchy people at the old house came and knocked on the door, and he was like it wasn't a window cleaner, it was a guttering cleaning, I think it was, or something like that. And I was like, no, we don't need it, we'd rent, so I don't really care about the state of the gutters, it's not my problem. And he looked really sketchy, and then we like saw him and his mate walking down the road, and like it totally looked like a sort of setup where one of them was a lookout and one of them was seeing if you were in and stuff. So I'm much happier now I've got that, because then if anything like that were to happen, you've got, you know, a recording of anyone suspicious coming to your door the week before you got broken into. It's been really good. I feel like all we ever do on this podcast is talk about the Ring doorbell. They really should have got a sponsorship deal from them.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
I'm probably going to buy another doorbell pro thing to stick up, another of the chimes, sorry, and stick it upstairs, because we don't hear it at all up at the top of the house, pretty well insulated. Like my wife will be downstairs just shouting at me for ages and I just don't hear her. It's really insulated between the bottom and top floor, so I'll probably get another one of those just to plug in on the upstairs landing. But apart from that, I've been really pleased with it.
Yeah, they are good. I got the standard one, and then because I couldn't get the HD at the time, and there was a reason why I can't use it anyway, but anyway, and then I got the pro cams, which are really good, so I got one of those on the back gate. So it's really handy for deliveries, because you just sort of send the guy around and then I can see him turning up the other one. But the motion thing's cool, because we've had our garden and front sort of paving redone. And we've got rid of our early warning system, because the early warning system was the really bad patio stones that we had out the front. There was one that rocked. And so you always could tell, even if the curtains were closed or whatever, you know, you'd suddenly hear this da-dum outside and you'd know that someone was walking along the path. And so now it's all been redone with this lovely new sort of paving. We've lost that, but the motion thing is really, really cool. And like you say, because you still get people, even though I've got the doorbell there and even though it's obvious, that don't ring the damn doorbell. They knock on the door.
Oh, so annoying.
So I still get the motion. So I get the motion and I can then go on and it's amazing. I mean, I think I said before, you know, we were sitting on the Lake Garda in a motorhome and I answered the door and shooed these people away and said I was busy, you know, can't deal with you. And looking at some of the videos on the Ring site of people, where they're just obviously like the people you say, they knock on the door and then they don't expect a response. And when there is one, they go, yes, I am a gardener. Do you need gardening done? Sort of make something up on the spot because they weren't expecting it, there to be an answer. Or the best one I saw was someone actually trying to take it off. The guy was sort of fiddling around with it and just trying to play with it. And then the voice goes, yeah, can I help you? And he was like, do you know where the shops are? Local shops? Like, do you know where the vets are? Whatever. It's like, what are you doing? But we're in a pretty good area, but we're pretty safe around here. But there was down because we're in, there's Luggershall and Faberstown. They're both like next to each other. And Luggershall was a sort of town that was a bit further away, but it's grown. And so it's grown up, or village, and it's grown up to sort of touch against Faberstown now. So they're sort of combined in the same thing, but we're classed as like a hamlet of Luggershall or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. So our area is pretty good actually, but down in Luggershall, there's been some issues recently with a couple of sort of dodgy people that were looking around. And some people were getting like the doorbells wrong at like 2 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, hearing someone outside at 2 o'clock in the morning. And one person had, it wasn't the Ring one, it was the, Nest. It was the Nest cam. They had a Nest cam outside their house, and they actually caught the guy trying to get in. And he got caught and arrested. He got recognized because the camera was so good. You know, it was an HD camera, so they got a really good shot of this guy. He got recognized, he got arrested, and he got put away. So, you know, it's amazing how the sort of the dodgy people are not keeping up to date with what the technology is around now. You know, that someone can just have a 70 yeah. quid, 80 quid Foscam camera sitting in their living room or sitting outside their house, and that thing can actually sync to the cloud. You know, so it's not even the case of I've got to this camera, just destroy the camera when you get to it. It's too late. It's already filmed it and it's already uploaded it. Because there's some really cool services like CamCloud where you can configure, if you've got Foscam cameras, you can configure it via CamCloud, and it will just FTP stuff up, you know, as it takes these images. Yeah, you've got this backup. It's pretty amazing.
I had that with the Canary. Was much the same thing. Nice. It's just constantly streaming up, and you can set a siren off on that, which is always fun.
Yes, but I just try that.
I used to do that to my wife if she was downstairs, and I'd see her like going into my cupboard and getting out like 12 bites or something that I told her I'd been saving, and then I'd just set off the alarm, like, get away from that.
Flash all the lights and everything else.
Yeah. Oh, God, but no, I wasn't too fussed about it for the security thing, because again, didn't live in like a too bad an area or anything. I'm not worried about constant break-ins, but it's sort of like, I think it's like 230 quid for the Pro model, and I wanted that one because that one's going to get HomeKit eventually, and it's got full HD and all that stuff. And I was like, and if it was just for the convenience of having it ring the doorbell and send me a notification, I'd be like, I'm not going to spend that much on it. But then the added part of it having the video camera for the security side of it, it's like tipped it over, being like, yeah, okay, it's a worthwhile purchase, because people are more likely to be going to the front of the house before they try and break in anywhere else. I am really interested. I want to get the, I can't remember the name of it, but it's the newer ones they're making where they've got the floodlight cameras on them.
Oh, yes.
So you've got the two floodlights and the camera. But again, you have to hardwire it in, which is, again, one of the reasons they're going to get HomeKit support. But then again, now that all the others have got... now that the iOS 11 changes are coming along where you don't need a special piece of hardware to make it HomeKit compatible, there's no reason the others couldn't be now. But these ones specifically, they've said it's not HomeKit now, but it's got the hardware, so we could do a firmware update and will do later on. So I really want those, but they're out of stock at the moment. Or I'm not sure if they've even launched in the UK. They've maybe just launched in the US. But I definitely want those. I want one over the back garden and like one out the front of our garage, because then you've got... Once motion sensed, you can have the floodlights come on, just like a traditional security camera. But then you're going to get the notifications, and then you get the video recording and all that kind of stuff as well. So I'm hoping that those will come out fairly soon, because I'll definitely get two of those. And I'll probably get an electrician to put them in, because I'm not buggering around with that again.
Yeah, I've had my own share of stuff like that. I think, I'll get electricians to do things like that in the future. I mean, the Ring cameras are nice. So I've got the HD camera, one at the office, one outside the office, and one only because I had a spare. I actually bought two and thought, actually, I only need one at the back gate. But then I thought I'll put one outside the office. What's really impressive about those is that they're not wired in. They're solar paneled. So I bought the optional solar panel. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, once the garage one is fine because the sun comes sort of over the front of our house and then obviously, you know, gets to the top point and then goes back over the sort of back of the house and shines into the back of the office. So the apparently, you know, only need about an hour of sunlight to be able to top up and keep charged. So as long as you've charged it up to start with. So if you start it at 20%, there's a chance it could end up running down at some point. But if you fully charge it manually, then just set it up and then get it going, it just maintains that. It just tops up every day and it's fine. Even, you know, in not really bright sunlight, in just sort of normal English weather. But the really impressive one is in the office, because the where that's positioned is it's only really getting light when the sun comes over the house. And the sun doesn't come directly over the house. It sort of comes sort of towards the house and then to the right. So it's sort of over the office. It's not shining directly down on this solar panel. And it has run out once, and that was only because I don't think I fully charged it. I didn't do what I've just said, and I put it straight up, and it eventually just didn't get the light enough to top it up. But since it's been since I took it out, fully charged it, put it back, I've never had to touch it, and it sits there at 100% most of the time. And it's getting, you know, probably, I can't even imagine it's getting an hour of sunlight, because obviously there's daylight outside, but it's not getting any direct sun necessarily. But it's just really impressive. You know, they don't, I guess the way they work in some way that they go into this low power mode where they sit there. Obviously the motion sensor kicks in, and that must ramp up the mode in terms of the power to sort of kick in the connection.
It's probably not recording as much, or it's just
exactly
got it on a super low resolution until it senses motion, and then it can sort of switch
on the Wi-Fi quickly or whatever and suddenly come back to life. But it's really impressive. I mean, yeah. So I don't know if you can hook the solar panels up to the doorbells. I imagine you can because they're the same micro USB.
I'm pretty sure you can.
It's pretty cool.
But you can for the normal doorbell. The Pro one's just hardwired. But so it's good. I've been pleased with it. So I might end up just getting the stick-on cameras because I don't really need it with HomeKit support. And the HomeKit support isn't there anyway. It doesn't make much difference to me. The app works fine. I've not had any latency on the doorbell. Like if someone presses the doorbell, I get a notification pretty much instantly.
Again,
it's probably because it's got the hard wiring, so it's always connected to Wi-Fi, it's always on, always recording stuff, because it can. It's not battery conscious, I guess, whereas I imagine the normal doorbell, the motion sensor wakes it up and then it connects to the Wi-Fi and then it starts streaming and then it sends a notification. So there could be times when that is a little bit more, you get a couple seconds more latency perhaps, whereas I've not seen, like, because I've read a few reviews, because obviously you mentioned it before, and I looked at a few others, and some people were like, sometimes the doorbell doesn't ring until long after they've gone, or like, you know, 10 seconds after they've rung the doorbell, at which point they're leaving, whereas I get them, as I say, pretty much instantaneously.
I get the notifications pretty quickly. I get, there's been situations where I haven't been able to connect straight away, so I've sort of launched the app. And they've got the macOS app now. There's a sort of beta there you can download, which is quite nice.
Ah, nice.
I didn't even realize that was available, and someone told me, so I went and got that. It's a nice implementation of it as well. You can do all the motion stuff and everything with it, and add new devices. You know, it's almost like a full implementation. And sometimes when that's fired up, like it did it earlier, it just sort of took a little while to connect. And so I've had a couple of situations where I've just had to sort of go and run out because I haven't been able to speak to them. But it's very rare. I mean, it's pretty much, you know, 99% reliability in terms of someone presses the doorbell and I hear the stuff go off. The only thing I've had to do is, like you've just done, is I forget to turn it back on, but I turn the office one off because I've got the motion sensor and the doorbell on the chime. And then when we do things like this, I remember to turn it off, and then I never remember to turn it back on again.
Yeah, it needs an easier way to do that, like say turn it off for like 2 hours or something. Or maybe I could set up a flick button to do it.
I mean, that's where like the HomeKit or Amazon type integration would be cool, where I could just say, you know, hey Siri, or better not, or hey Dingus, mute the ring, for 2 hours or something like that, and it'll just, you know, turn that off for two. Shut up! It's just Siri kicking in. God help me!
I like the fact that it doesn't set off anyone else's anymore, but it still sets off yours fairly reliably.
Yeah. Oh god.
Funny enough, I did that at the weekend. I had my father-in-law over, and I said to Maya, "Oh, hey Siri, do this, blah blah." He's like, "How did that work? You're not plugged into power." And I was like, "You don't need to be plugged into power with the 6S or the 7 Plus." He's like, "What? Yeah, you do." I was like, "No, you don't." And then I showed him the setting and the thing, and now he's quite happy to spend the rest of the evening just shouting, "Hey Siri, at his phone over it." Just getting him to do stuff.
Yeah. I end up screaming at the Echo more than I do at anybody else. I think it's just like, you know, she'll suddenly fight. Especially when you want to show something, it's always when you want to show off. You know,
yeah, oh, watch this. Always.
Let me turn my kettle on, and it's like, okay, turn it on. No, didn't understand you. Okay, turn the kettle on. No, didn't understand you. And it's like, okay, press the button. Damn it.
That's one of the things that I set up a few, definitely since we last recorded. And that was, I got the Hive thermostat installed. Gas guy came and installed upstairs and downs. And then I found a Homebridge plugin for it. So now I can say to Siri, how hot is it upstairs? It'll be like, the temperature upstairs is 21.9 degrees. And it's great because then I can say, set the temperature to 24, and then the heating will come on. Because I've got the heating always on. So if I you literally just change the temperature of the thermostat and it will fire everything
That's
up.
Nice.
So I can control the thermostat temperature up and down and ask how hot or cold it is both upstairs and downstairs separately, which is pretty cool. And I can have it turn the hot water on or off as well. Not that I ever do. I mean, it's kind of pointless because I'm always in. So it's...
Yeah,
I don't use any location stuff to decrease the temperature while I'm out and then boost it back up before I get home. And I have the hot water always on because I hate it when I run out of hot water. So I just maintain it at a constant level, which I don't think really costs that much more anyway to do it that way. Because you're not having to keep fire it up. So I don't really need it, but I like it because I know there'll be times when I go on holiday, I always forget to turn the thermostat right down or do whatever. So it's pretty nice, but that works really well with Siri. I was surprised how well the plugin worked, because obviously it's completely unsupported. It's not HomeKit enabled, but it's kind of nice, the interface for it. The only problem is that it has a option to turn on cool, because it's all built for American, where you'd have air conditioning and heating in the same thing. So it's like off-scheduled cool and heat. It's like... the cool button does nothing. It's like the guy that implements it is like, I can't find a way to disable that button, so just ignore that.
don't worry about that.
But it works cool. Works nicely with Siri, so it's I'm slowly getting there with everything connected up together. Just need a few more bits and pieces, but house is pretty much filled with HomeKit stuff now.
Yeah, it's quite nice. I mean, I haven't bought anything else recently that's HomeKit and Amazon or Echo related, I don't think. But I'm always on the lookout for something. I was looking up blinds in the office. I've got blinds anyway, but just like the pull down ones. And even though it's only like 8 blinds for Christ's sake that I've got to, but I was even thinking, God, I wish I could just do that with my voice. Have it automatic, throughout the day.
I got a quote for that and it was crazy. So in the end, I just got roller blinds, Roman blinds put it. But I wanted to have the whole, tell Siri to put the blinds down, set the blinds to 50% high, that kind of thing. Because it's all there. You can get it. It's quite difficult to get it in this country, but there is one manufacturer that does it. But it was something crazy, like £500 a blind, and it's like, I don't want it that much.
I think we looked at it for the bedroom, for the curtains, just to be able to say, open the curtains, close the curtains. And I think I looked it up and it was like $2,500. It's like,
it's just crazy.
I think I'll just get out of bed and do that. That's fine.
And the problem is as well that for the blinds, they take up a huge amount of space, because the way that they work is that you put something like 8 D-cell batteries in them.
And
it folds down. That's how it's powered. And so the amount of space you need for the box to stick up is huge, which didn't work for me with the PVC windows are quite close, and I've got like little vents to keep moisture out while the house settles, that kind of stuff. So they weren't going to be an option, and I've got a bay window, which is particularly tricky to put stuff in anyway. So doing it that way wasn't going to work, which was a shame, because I greatly wanted to be able to control the blinds with my voice. But again, no reason. I can just get up and do it. So
yeah.
I'm just getting lazy now. I want to get more stuff like sensors that trigger stuff. Like I've got an Aware, which is like a CO2 monitor and dust monitor and stuff. And that can use if this, then that, to send notifications. So like the example they give is if the humidity goes up, it can then turn your dehumidifier on, stuff like that, which is nice. Mm. And I've seen that the Dyson, you know those Dyson fans that don't actually have a fan in it?
Yep.
They've got like a hot and cold one. And so you could do the same thing with that, like have the temperature change. And they've got an air purifying model, so you could have the air purifier come on. And they've got like a whole app thing that I never knew that they did, where you can control all of that stuff from an app now called Dyson Link, I think. And so there's a Homebridge plugin for that, so you can control it all from HomeKit. But I found out that HomeKit has like a notion of what a sensor is, and so you can do most of that stuff in HomeKit without having to go through a service like If This and That, which is fine, but by making calls out to the internet to do it, then obviously you have to make all of your devices available outside of the network, which increases the security risk, with the majority of them being very, very poor for that kind of thing. And then also means that, you know, if the server goes down, it isn't going to work. So I really want to find some more stuff like that, but I've not got anything yet. But that's my next big thing, sensors everywhere.
Yeah, I like all that stuff. I've got the air conditioner I've got. It took a while, but they finally got some support with If This Then That, which is nice. So I've got it hooked in. I mean, it's just really crappy, the implementation, but it's hooked in through Echo. But the trigger words are all really crap, the way that you have to say it. So you have to sort of say, you know, Echo, trigger aircon to cool, or trigger aircon to hot. And it's, I'd rather just say, you know, Echo, turn on the air conditioning in the office, or turn it on, you know, cool the office, heat the office, that sort of thing. But it's that you can specify the last bit, but it's that trigger, you know, trigger aircon. So you have to say trigger, but then the rest of it, you can pretty much say what you want. So I have to say things like, you know, trigger aircon to off, or trigger aircon off. And I had to do it to aircon because AC, for some reason, had some issues with, so she wasn't understanding me. But there's some nice touches with that, where I've got it hooked into location, so that if I leave home and I'm sort of gone within a certain range, then it will turn the air conditioning off for the office if it's already on. It doesn't use much power anyway, to be fair, but I've actually disabled that at the moment because it was pissing me off, because it's been so hot recently.
Yeah, you want to keep it cold.
I've actually left the air conditioning on overnight, because what it does anyway is it goes into like a low power mode if it doesn't detect anyone. So if there's no lights and it doesn't detect movement, it stays on, but it doesn't stay fully on. It just sort of tops, you know, I don't know how it works, but it basically doesn't go into full AC mode. So you still get there in the morning and you've got a cool office. And then as you go in, it will detect you and start to ramp it up a little bit. You don't get that sort of heat hit you as you come in. And I've got one of those OWL electrical things that's hooked into the cloud, so I can, with a little app that I can check on the electricity usage. And so just having the aircon on just doesn't make much of a difference. But I turned it off because what was happening was I was going out for a run or nipping down to the shops, coming back and then doing lunch or whatever, and then coming back into the office, and when it was like 30 degrees outside. And I was like, holy shit, it's hot in here. And it's because the damn, because I told it, you know, if I go out of range, turn off the air conditioning. And so it had. But it's quite nice. It's quite nice having all that stuff connected. But yeah, the heat is, this year is like, well, probably last year, or no, the year before, I think was a hot one. But this year definitely is like, I'm so glad I got air conditioning in the office, God.
Yeah, I've just got a little tiny little mobile unit, but my wife was home, so she had it. So I was just sat there, oh, it's too hot. When I woke up this morning, I looked outside and saw it was drizzling. I was like, oh, thank goodness.
I think there was one day like last week or something where it was, when it was really crazy, that super hot day, where I think Hannah, I heard the little sort of digits going on the door lock, and she came in and I was like, what's up? She went, I just wanted to come in because it's so hot out there. And it was like, it was literally like a fridge in here. It was just so nice.
Yeah.
And you don't feel it. It's that whole thing. It's like being in the States where you're sort of in your hotel or something, or in your apartment or whatever, and it's all nice. And you sort of step out the door and it feels like you've just walked into a wall of heat. You're just not even aware of it. It's amazing.
My friend Phil's got air conditioning throughout his whole house. And so he loves it. Wow. Whenever it's a really hot day, he'll just gloat. Like, literally, you can guarantee if the temperature's like over, say, 28, 29, he'll have tweeted something about how nice, cool, crisp 18 in every room of his house. It's like, ugh. But then outside, he's got like a refrigeration unit mounted to the side of his house. It's huge. It's like a proper full-on American system there.
Yeah,
that's pretty
nice. Can't have a phone call outside or anything because the noise it makes. But
yeah. Anyway, we should probably wrap it up there because I've got to build a Apple TV app before 4 o'clock. So,
as you do.
Yeah, I better get on that.
Cool.
Cool. I'll speak to you next time, Jason.
Cheers. See ya.